facebook.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of Technology Bites.
Come, welcome. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And he's... I've got to figure out where we're going to fit Lee in. Lee is now... pretty much part of the show.
He's not comfortably before, between me and you.
Before Groovehouse.
Oh, you mean like in the roll call? Okay.
Well, it's weird to say I'm Jay Lee. I'm Lee. We got to get you an extra syllable.
Just go. No. I could just go last, but before Groovehouse.
I think we give him a rotating name. Like he could be Ominous Lee, and then he could be Dangerous Lee.
What if he's just Arsley?
I think in the UK that's not good.
That's Lee.
So Lee Hutchins.
Hutchinson.
Lee obviously.
Hutchinson. Hutchinson. I am the son of a Hutch.
Son of a Hutch. You son of a Hutch. Lee Hutchinson from Ars Technica has now ingratiated himself to
Wednesday
co-host
nights.
Status Wednesday nights on Technology Bites.
Yet he showed up without Soylent. I thought that was part of the deal. I was going to get a dinner out of this.
No, you get the first one was free, and after that,
Flicted always shows up with interesting things to drink. Although I'm staying tonight.
Always is, I mean, recently.
Yeah.
Really, it's not. I mean,
well, that's always to me. I don't have much memory.
Tell us what you're drinking tonight.
Tonight's beverage of choice is mint chocolate coconut milk.
Mmm.
Well, so welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Meet our new host, Lee Hutchinson.
Yay.
From Ars Technica.
Yay.
We're going to figure out our whole new intro and incorporate that Groovehouse is standing by, as always, to take phone calls at 713-526-5738. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. That is the website where most of the valuable information that you need to know about the show is hosted.
Friend us on Facebook.
Yes, but this my computer does not like this program I'm running.
Stop running it.
I'm going to have to do
Mac
that.
OS.
Quit doing
Mac
that.
OS. Stop.
Do we have a Twitter account? We should get a Twitter account.
We have a Twitter account,
Geek Radio.
Has it done anything in a while?
It has not done anything in a while, and I'm going to have to reboot my computer.
We sent it out there on its own, and it just kind of sat there. It didn't show no sentience.
We turned it loose on the internet, and it didn't really amount to much.
It refused to tweet on its own.
It posted a picture of a cat, and that's it.
Yes, we do have...
That might have been Dwight.
Let me double-check to make sure that that is true, but I think we still have the Geek Radio...
Guess we could.
So what is the R's?
Yes, we have the Geek
Ars
Radio.
Technica. Is it
R's?
Is it Latin?
R's Technology? Yes. Yeah, so the site was started by Ken Fisher and John Stokes. John Stokes has long since left the site, but Ken Fisher is the editor in chief, and he started it while he was a graduate student at Harvard. And it's Latin.
Ars gratis Ars, borrowed from, I'm sure.
Ars Technica is, it's supposed to mean the art of technology. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So they misspelled it.
Not if you're Latin.
Not if does you're it? I thought Latin. Like there's what Ars longa vita brevis is life is long but vitality is short. So is it life of technology?
No, it's life is life and art. Yeah, and then art for the sake of art alone.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ars,
I took
art.
German in high school, so I can't. I'm not.
I always thought it was Ars.
Technology.
Me
no,
too.
That's dirty. You're
I
making
thought,
it dirty.
See, I thought all the like every time somebody said. The site name in England, like people snickered under their breath.
Yeah.
Why does everything have to be dirty?
Like every time, like, you know, the register referenced the site, they were just like, Ars Technica.
All right, the Geek Radio Twitter account has awakened.
The sleeper has awakened.
For everybody who's seen the Star Wars trailer, the teaser trailer.
How many cross guards does your lightsaber have, Peter?
I want the Swiss Army knife version.
Mine spin like pinwheels on mine.
Mine has a corkscrew and scissors and a Phillips head screwdriver.
I heard that was like their they let George Lucas have one piece of input on the new movie.
Did you guys see the modified version of the trailer, the George Lucas?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That was so great.
Did you see how the media tried to manufacture drama out of the Black Stormtrooper?
Yeah.
I missed that.
I did not see that.
I don't watch Fox.
There was a claim by many media outlets that everybody is up in arms about the fact that there cannot be a black stormtrooper because they're all clones, yada, yada, yada.
Well, that's totally not true.
But the
That's Clone Wars, and then they probably reintegrated.
But why is he a stormtrooper?
My point is we don't know that he's a stormtrooper.
He could be in stormtrooper uniform,
Han Solo
there.
Han Solo, Luke Skywalker did it.
That was my immediate thought,
the uniform fit pretty well, though. It looked pretty clunky on them when they were looking for the trash compactor buttons.
The point is that several people pointed out they could not actually find the controversy that these news outlets were reporting existed, that people were upset. I mean, there were a few tweets about here and there about how, you know, maybe it's not a black.
It's called manufactured news.
It is. It's totally manufactured.
So basically somebody at the
news
said somebody probably should be upset about this, so let's write about people being upset about this.
It's almost like they're assuming that this outrage is going to exist or must exist because racism. But now...
Because yeah, Ferguson. No,
the more accurate outrage I saw was from a former member of the show, Mr. Man. If you know his real name and have him as a friend on Facebook, then you saw it. His outrage, he mentioned that in passing, the thing about people with the Black Stormtrooper thing. But his outrage was that the performance of the X-Wings, that they shouldn't be in atmosphere like that, and that doesn't match the specs.
They can do
now, that's nerd outrage. That's the real outrage.
No, that's in the future.
They can do whatever they want.
That's a dumb thing to be outraged about.
They should have queued up Surfing Safari.
You know,
I think as long as they go go fast enough.
No. In the Star Wars universe,
they can do
they
it.
They use the shields that they have on the fighters can be formed.
Or no, oh no, it wasn't the X-Wings. I'm sorry, it was the TIE fighters. The
well,
shields.
Same, it's same,
like,
well, okay, TIE fighters don't have shields, so that's a
well.
Much
how
more
did
valid
how
complaint.
Did how did Luke get down to the planet to meet Yoda no, and crash?
So it wasn't. It wasn't. Yeah. That was my mistake. I'm sorry.
That's what
I misremembered.
So
it was the TIE wing, the TIE fighters flying in atmosphere with the Millennium Falcon.
Well, in the J.J. Abrams universe, I believe that they're powered by lens flare.
Well, in the J.J. Abrams universe, all spacecraft have to crash into the planet at some point where the Enterprise.
He loves. He does do like spaceships in the sky, in the atmosphere, in the sky.
Yep.
Better
around.
Than just about
the
anybody
sky
else.
With Abrams.
So where is the propulsion on a TIE fighter?
TIE fighter, TIE stands for twin ion engines. It's
whoa!
Come on, everybody knows what fighter called TIE fighters. It's not because they look like bow ties.
Our really? Co-host is legit.
I thought it was a slam on like
we didn't even really vet him, but he apparently
or Thai
would
food
have to.
Or
awesome.
Something.
So go to Wikipedia and look it up. It's on there. TIE, twin ion engine, TIE fighters.
So,
entry written by Lee Hutchinson.
Just now.
submitted 7 seconds ago. There's no content. It just says TIE fighter stands for.
Well, you know, all the way up until, you know, I knew that. How many Star Wars movies there are down there?
Three.
Six.
Well,
six.
Yeah, that's
well, yeah.
Attention.
Thanks. Nine
official,
if you count all of the mishmashes.
Six official.
Three releases.
Three.
Well,
and three true ones.
Special.
Yeah.
I stand by three.
But how many actual movies are there? There are
technically
three.
Six distinct titles.
Yes, the easy answer is six.
six.
I love that Flicked sticking to his gun, though.
Well, six and a Christmas
how
special.
How many movies containing the title Star Wars did George Lucas make? Six.
Right.
How
okay.
many Star Wars movies are there? Three.
Well, I remember, I'm not as cool as Colbert, who saw it 2 weeks before.
Oh, yeah, that was actually a pretty good tirade.
That
was, so
yeah.
That's
yeah, it.
That
nice.
Did you see that?
No.
What? Okay, so Stephen Colbert
yeah.
talking about the trailer. He said that was all people could talk about. His
well, there, everyone was upset about the fact that there was a hilt on the new.
Well, that's
yeah.
What, yeah, he
that's
has,
what he led into.
Yeah.
He led in with to, you know people being with. Upset. Well, he didn't lead in with that exactly.
He
led in
he
with
went
his
to that.
Going
yeah.
to see the movie,
right.
And he won tickets from a radio station and saw it 2 weeks
without
before,
knowing what it was. Just
without,
showed up
before it was released nationwide.
The trailer. We're talking about the trailer.
No.
The original movie,
like
in
1976.
Oh, okay. All right.
So he talked about how he had seen it 2 weeks before anybody else had seen it.
All right.
And then he went on to have a conversation about the people that were upset because of the cross hilts on the lightsaber in the new trailer.
Yep.
And he explained them. And it, obviously
yeah,
some...
it splits out, so it's all one single beam. And
right.
that little part, the guard thing that people said would slice off and it
is
wouldn't do
to
anything,
protect your
that's
hand.
Actually to protect your hand.
From the
yeah,
cross
from,
beam.
From the cross beam. If anyone slices out through it, it's still going to be, you know, that little trident but flared out of
right.
lightsaber.
Well, he talked about, and he explained boom. All of that, and he says, you'll understand this in 2 weeks when you catch up to where I am right now.
That was pretty awesome.
But his point when he was talking about, you know, I flashed back to 1977 when I went to go see the movie, and I saw it 9 times at the Galleria.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, like Stephen Colbert was in his chair, and he was pretending like he was, you know, firing blasters at TIE fighters, the twin engine.
Twin ion
engine. And it reminded me, when I remember watching the movie, and when the credits, you know, when the intro credits ran, you know, the storyline came across and it said episode 4. Uh-huh. It's like, okay, well, that's confusing. And then,
yeah.
you know, that was confusing because there was no, like, there's none of the Star Wars universe existed, and there was no internet to go, what does that mean? So 4 came out. And then as time progressed, it became known that there was going to be probably a trilogy. And then it became known that there was going to be 9 movies in total.
Yeah, Lucas had a plan, and supposedly he had the Star Wars, the three-part saga, the trilogy of trilogies was part of this thing he called like the Journal of the Wills, Whills. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be this grand plan he had for like the forward and backward history of the Star Wars universe. He had huge grand visions. It's just unfortunately. after all the years, we finally got the prequels, and it was like, oh, this is what you've been sitting on this whole time.
Some things are better left unrealized.
Well, I realized, and this is what, you know, I was 15 or 16 years old when this happened, when the first movie came out. And I remember thinking, as this was evolving, okay, well, we got a movie release. At best, we can hope for is every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, three, four with those. Yeah.
Yeah. And
did you see the interview that has just resurfaced with Mark Hamill, where it's from like 1982 or 83. I'm going to get the dates wrong about when it was aired. I saw a link to it on Reddit the other day, but it's an interview. Mark Hamill is being asked by the interviewer, like, has George Lucas told you anything about like the Far Away story, you know, and would you like be like in the future version, like the last nine or the last three movies, would you be back for that? And Hamill said, remember, this is taped in like 1983 or whatever. Hamill says, well, I've talked to George Lucas about it, and he said that like maybe if he gets around to making them, that he'd want me back as like old Luke. But he said, I asked him, you know, when would that be? And he said probably around 2011. And so he like got actually really close with the date, because here we are in 2014
and we're looking at 2015. Yeah.
And he's going to be back as old Luke.
Well, I remember as those movies came out, I was thinking, wow, there's going to be nine of these. If everything goes according to the plan, there's going to be nine. And am I going to live long enough to see them all?
Well, hopefully.
But then when the first three came out and they steadily went downhill all the way to, you know, Return of the Jedi.
Revenge of the Jar Jar.
But then the second trilogy came out, and I thought, you know, this is not worth living for.
No.
This is not worth living for. But now I've seen the trailer for the new one, and I'm kind of excited again.
Well, and Disney isn't just going to do the three movies. They're going to do additional spin-off movies too. That was the plan that they had. It was from a couple of months ago. They were saying it's not just going to be episode 7, 8, 9. They've already got TV properties in. There's going to be at least one spin-off movie and possibly three. And so Disney is going to like run with it. And
got my fingers crossed for another Christmas special.
They've opened 400 factories in Asia to make action figures for all these different properties.
There we go. Yeah, a whole nother.
We're going to be up to our necks in little plastic Star Wars aliens.
My Padawan says.
Abrams has done a pretty good job with the continuity. Like the one big change to the Millennium Falcon. Did y'all pick it up? I'm sure. The reflector dish that Calrissian knocked off, it's now square. You know, just little things like that.
Well, the people who follow the Star Wars universe, there's this massive, you know, extended universe. Like
there are different nomenclatures. Yes, for the
Star Wars canon. And if you're interested in reading about this, I mean, so all the Star Wars tie-in novels and everything, they're rated on this on various scales of canonicity.
Is this on Wikipedia?
Yes, it's on Wikipedia, okay. Which is one of the Star Wars Wikipedia sites. But so one of the things that Disney has done upon acquiring the property is they've taken this, you know, extremely in-depth, you know, just massively in-depth history of the galaxy that goes forward and backward by thousands of years that's been amassed over the last two decades, and they've just pitched it out the window. they've totally just pitched it, which I'm frankly in total agreement with, because if you're going to tell a story in the Star Wars universe, it's very, very difficult, especially for an entity like Disney that wants to come in, frankly, wants to come in and monetize it, because that's, you know, it's their property.
Some
and that's
Marvel
what they're
DC reboot.
Yeah.
Less people to pay.
Plus, well, it's not just that. It's if you've got to fit a new story into this, you know, giant spider web, you just can't do it. You can't, because you're going to write, like anything you write, you're going to conflict with something, and you're going to make all these people angry. And so they've just gone ahead and so all the Admiral Thrawn stuff, all the Kevin J. Anderson novels, everything, it's all gone.
So there's not even a pretense of a reboot like with Star Trek. They're just coming in and saying, all right, we're not even going to explain why we're doing this.
Nope.
It's just gone.
The movies stay. Obviously, the movies are still official.
But all the supporting.
But everything else is basically, and they're not going to pitch like all of it. They've got a guy, I've forgotten his name.
No spoilers.
They have a person, like a Lucasfilm employee, who is the official keeper of the
historian.
They call him, it's like the keeper of the holocron or something like that. But he's maintained the EU canon source, and they're allowing him to sort of help pick and choose the small bits that stay. So hopefully, because there's some good stuff in there. There's like the Admiral Thrawn stuff is great, and hopefully they'll keep that. But I mean, we'll see. We got another year or so, and then we'll find out.
Didn't Abrams do that to Star Trek as well?
Yeah, there were definitely little nods of things. That's what I mean, the continuity.
Yeah. Well, I think he went just a little too far with what he kept with the Star Trek reboot. But then again, there's an explanation for that. It's an alternate universe, maybe, and it's kind of tied. Well, whatever.
So everyone was trimming their goatees. I couldn't figure that out. No one had upside down mustaches.
How
it was very confusing.
How deep should we get in this episode? How deep can we go into this dork rabbit hole?
Dork hole.
Suddenly, I don't want to go there anymore.
KD5 on IRC claimed there were actually only two Star Wars movies and one extended film selling toys.
Now, what I want to know is, are they going to keep, like, Caravan of Courage and the Ewok Adventure movies? Because those were, like, the best. Grew up watching those.
I think that's a function of age, because I also thought the Ewoks were kind of cool.
Yeah, they're terrible.
And then I went back, you know, I didn't visit the Ewoks for, like, 10 years. I went through college, you know, I grew up, I got a job, and I went back, and I was like... Wow.
Yeah,
I remember being excited about a Christmas special.
I don't remember. I think maybe sometime in college, I went from like, I actually kind of also am of the opinion there's two real movies because somewhere in college sometime I started calling the third movie the Muppets Take Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because it really, I mean, it's just,
yep.
There were some in the second, and then the third one is just like the Muppet Show.
Unnecessary cutesiness. There was dancing. There were just little, looking at each other, little side jokes that weren't important. And that was the first time, and I think it's because he had more CG. I guess it wasn't CG. What did you call it back in the day? Just special effects? You know, like the two
effects.
Logs coming down, and, you know, all the ways the little Ewoks killed the great big, you know, the AT-ATs.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think that put him down that path, and people buying merchandise said it was okay.
I don't think anybody could really resist the effect that Hansen had on the movie industry at that time. That was where the money was.
Well, no, like some things
like
Dark
Crystal, and
I still have Dark Crystal nightmares.
Oh, you said
yeah,
you said
that was good though.
I thought you said Hansen.
Oh, Jim Henson.
Henson.
I thought you said. Did you say Hansen?
I did say Hansen. But
I thought they were kids in the like 90s. They weren't even around then.
No, I forget. Now, was Hansen involved
Jim
with
Henson.
The last movie, or was that pure ILM? Was that Industrial Light and Magic?
I don't know that he was involved with it, but you could definitely, at least in my mind, that was such a nod to that kind of, you know, costume puppet character.
I think Henson's group did. You know, Yoda was a puppet, and Frank Oz was making it move and doing the voice.
Yeah,
and that's,
there's a lot of crossover.
He's one of the Muppeteer guys.
See, right. Like, Jabba done very, very well. Like, I have no problem with Jabba. And, like, even, like, there were cutesy things, you know, in Jabba's den.
What about when Han Solo walked on his tail?
Han Mibuki.
That was CGI added later to a horrible movie.
I don't remember how young you were, Barrett.
No, that wasn't in the original movie. Yeah. They wanted to add a clip where Han talked to Jabba, but... Back when they recorded it, Jabba was originally a human, and so this is when Lucas was adding stuff to the film. In the original film, Han Solo is talking to him, and he walks around behind him because it's a guy, and he says some stuff.
Sheepskin-looking like outfit.
And so he needed to make him that into Jabba. So it was earlier, so he made him a skinnier Jabba. That helped. But he also decided, in order to make that scene work, he would make Han Solo step on Jabba's tail as he walked around behind him.
Yeah,
and Jabba, you know, eyes bulged out, and he went, "Ooh!" Like, it was really stupid.
It was not good.
Well, no, where I was going is Barrett noticing, you know, the puppet Jabba as a key thing is a measure of that he was a lot younger when he watched it, because. After the swimsuit thing, most people above a certain age, Jabba could have been, you know, they didn't even have to make him move. They didn't even have to have the eyes move. Like, they could have just had somebody do the voice and nobody would have noticed.
I was like, get that woman out of the way. I can't see the cool Jabba. She's ancillary to the story.
She's giving Jabba cooties. I must say, though, in that trailer, the moment that was just the, you know, I was watching it, it's like, oh, this is pretty cool. The you know, kind of dark guy in the cloak, you know, with the fancy lightsaber. My first thought was sort of kind of a, you know, like Harry Potter thing, where it's like, oh, Voldemort's in this.
It had that feel, like, yeah, they were going to go get some butterbeer and then go find some
A couple
Sith,
of people,
you know?
at work actually brought up Game of Thrones. They're like, oh, it's somebody walking through
that's straight
the
up winter is
forest.
Coming, yeah.
Like, yeah.
There you go. But the moment where it was kind of like, and I think Abrams sort of knew it, the moment where he just like, where I think he got back a lot of people that weren't happy with the, you know, 1, 2, and 3 by the numbering system, was, you know, because the Star Wars theme comes up when the Millennium Falcon was flying up in the sky and doing all the you know, cool flight stuff. That's when you get the full theme and all that kind of stuff. And that, to me, that was sort of the moment when it's like, okay, this might be back.
Well, he did a good job with timing. He did a good job with, you know, the cuts and with just the, I guess, just the minimalism of everything.
Except for maybe the rotating camera.
I think that was just eye candy. That was a little bit too much.
Put off by the camera that rotates this way and then comes in, and when it levels out, it's upside down. I was like, come on, man, that's just effects for effects' sake. You could at least have followed it in right side up.
Well, then he threw in a lens flare when it went across too.
Well, then it and I'll be curious to see if it maintains any of that, because you know the original Star Wars trilogy, there was that whole kind of World War II. Fighter plane.
I think he's getting rid of that, though. I think he's because he made someone tied to that, made a little bit of fun of that. Fun of, you know, we're not doing Tora, Tora, Tora. We're not doing, you know, World War II remake.
I just don't want it to have shaky cam just for, like, the sake of it being shaky cam.
I don't want him to do a pan across the major characters with all the lens flare. I don't want to see
that. That was the one thing to me that really stood out, other than the weird rolling R2-D2 thing. But was the stormtrooper deployment shot. Like, that was like, this is not look like Star Wars. No. This looks like J.J. Abrams. Yes.
Also, it looked dark, and it did not look sandy.
It was
so they're deploying somewhere else, yeah.
But the but like when the woman got on
the land speeder
motorcycle.
It's one of the popsicles. Yeah.
I was like, that could have been straight out of, like, the original film. Like, it really looked,
with
the
coloring
and everything looked very similar. So that was really nice. And then... I thought the X-wings going over the water was like a nice mixture between like the old movie style and Abrams style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that the fanboys brought up in general that at first I hadn't thought about, and then when they brought it up, it was like that is true. Is how come nothing? It's 30 years later, and they're still flying X-wings and all the flying fudgesicle thing was a lot less elegant than the land speeder that Luke had, you know, in the very first film.
Money.
I have two responses to that. The first is that the X-wings, if you look at them in freeze frame, they're different from the original X-wings. The wings are kind of split differently, and they look like totally different types of craft. And the second, much more practical answer, is that we fly aircraft and spaceships that are more than 30 years old all the time. It's just a matter of practicality.
The Rebels, they can't afford the new stuff.
Yeah, but are they the Rebels? They're not necessarily the
Rebels
now. Oh, yeah,
we don't really know.
They would be, I mean, if you hold with how the books did it, it's the New Republic now.
Ha, ha, ha. Can we, though?
We don't know. We just don't know.
And how come the Stormtroopers didn't have new helmets? Because it seems like every time they changed their mission...
They were. The helmets were different. Because the black bands on the side actually went all the way up. So the like white part under their eyes was actually detached from the rest of the white, unlike the old ones.
All right, so here's a question. If everyone could have one cameo, one nod, or you could say like J.J. Abrams, you will do this one thing to nod the old movies, what would it be? So I would say, like, you know, the really good one that everyone's kind of waiting for in the Star Trek reboot was the red shirt, you know, you've got three guys jumping down, and of course the guy in the landing party, the away party wearing red is going to die, and of course he did. So that was good. I think that was a nod to expectations, and he threw everything out the window. Would you make anything, what would you bring over from the old movies?
I would want to see...
more puppets.
I would want to see. Yes. No. I would want to see a much older Jar Jar Binks engaged in a diplomatic conference with an Ewok, and while they're doing that, the space bus that they're in is just like implodes and explodes in a giant fireball.
I'm oddly okay with that.
I would like to see Biggs as something in the movie.
I don't think Biggs made
You're
it.
Killing me.
Biggs died
did
in
he
the,
die?
The trench run.
Oh.
Biggs
no,
was
he
blown
did
up.
Die.
Wedge,
he
you're
did...
thinking about Wedge. Wedge
yeah,
is
yeah,
the
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
And we gotta have Wedge. I think the actor's still alive.
We really need Porkins.
Porkins.
No, he
bought
died.
It, man.
No, he died.
He needed his offspring.
No, but you're right. Because see, that was one thing that was weird to me, and I'm thinking about it. Because when I saw it in the theater, I remember when they were about to do the final attack on the Death Star. They're getting ready to get into the X-Wings, and Luke Skywalker sees his friend...
Biggs.
Yeah, from Tatooine.
Biggs Darklighter is his
and,
name.
And, you know, he's
his
like...
His last name's Darklighter?
Darklighter.
I remember he's, like, all excited, and they hug each other, and like, all right, see you on the other side. And then,
and, they don't.
And it was,
well,
he died, and that's what totally flipped Luke out and made him want to, like, stop and, like, get away. But then, after that first time I saw it in the theaters, it got edited, and you don't see Biggs, and you don't see Biggs die, or he dies, but you don't know it's Biggs, because they cut out that part where he meets him.
This has too much emotional depth.
I guess you're right.
Pull back.
Because I know I've seen that scene, but I think I must have seen it on one of the deleted.
You could put that scene back in as your Easter egg, then, or as your
the one nod that I would like to see, and I bet Flickley would like to see this too, is somehow for Han to clear up the whole Han shot first.
Man,
flashback. He wakes up from nightmares in a sweat.
General Solo, I heard this story. I heard this bar story about you and some bounty hunter named Greedo that, like, he shot you or you shot. No,
I think it'd be they could do it much more cleverly and have him shoot somebody in the next move in this movie and say he didn't even get a shot.
Like, explicitly stated.
Heck yeah,
in
I
the
shot
dialogue.
First.
Don't mess with
so
Han.
Bad innuendos that could go.
Don't mess with Han. He won't hesitate to shoot first.
He's like, I was a different man back then. I was a scruffy nerve herder.
So I was just looking on Wikipedia here, and the actor who plays Wedge Antilles, the other fighter, the other starfighter pilot.
The one that actually makes it.
Starfighter?
Starfighter pilot.
The last starfighter.
No, that's a different movie.
Equally good movie.
Wedge, the actor's name is Dennis Lawson. He's 67, still active, still acting, so we could totally potentially see a Wedge Antilles cameo in the new movie, which would be just totally badass.
Groove, you got a horse in this game, or a horse in this race? Dog in the game, dog in the hunt.
Everything sounds
stormtrooper in the
more Jar Jar.
Yeah, I would have if I was J.J. Abrams. I would have a stormtrooper hit his head while going through a door, just really quickly, just a little briefly, just thunk, you know.
Well, it was funny. There were some people I saw some people talking about it, of course, because everybody's like overanalyzing this trailer insanely.
Of course.
Splitting apart.
Like we are tonight.
Yeah.
And
what
so,
time is it?
30 minutes in, man.
And so several people across the internet said, hey, did you notice that the fact when they showed the stormtrooper transport, you know, they show all these stormtroopers, and one of them is, like, noticeably shorter than the other ones.
Luke.
It was a reference to the line that says, hey, aren't you a little short to be stormtroopers? That Leia said.
Yeah.
But then other people were like, that's just stupid. Y'all are, like, looking too hard for this. Like,
could be a gimme.
Come on, man.
So some people were like, no, it's legit. And other people were like, who cares if it's legit or not? It's still fun and interesting to look at it.
So what is the time frame on this movie supposed to be?
December. Oh,
no,
what do you mean?
I mean,
oh,
like,
I think 20, 30, 20 years, 30, 30 years.
30 years.
Which is about how far it seems away until it releases in theaters for me
so
right
wait,
now. Thank you, Groofhouse, for putting on my radar full year early.
I want to hear Peter's. I want to hear Peter's cameo.
Oh, yeah.
Who
sorry,
Peter.
Pete.
Have?
Well, you know, you guys have hit pretty good ones. Mine is the one I would. One that I would think of is, well, there's two. One is snarky, and the other one is a little sad. The snarky one is, I hope they bring back the Empire Strikes Back level of Star Wars for all the rest of the movies. Just
kind of
they
the
can
darkness.
Just keep that level instead of, you know.
Well, you know, Lawrence Kasdan is assisting with the script writing for the movie.
Right. So hopefully that one's going to happen. And that's my snarky one. The one that's sort of sad, I read this the other day. David Prowse, who was the body of Darth Vader.
Yes.
He has Alzheimer's, and so he is not going to – he couldn't participate and wouldn't be able to in the future. And so it's kind of – because, I mean, you know – Having old school Darth Vader even in flashback or something would have been kind of cool, especially if you have the you know the real guy. But you know otherwise you guys had all the really good ones.
What's I didn't know that about David Prowse. That's very sad.
Well, what the...
I got creeped out when I was told. Yeah, I was told. I didn't realize it. I was told. You know that David Prowse, who's the person who actually was in the Darth Vader suit. Was in Clockwork Orange and was the guy that like carried the guy in the wheelchair.
Yes.
That
yes,
like
was.
I was like, oh my god, worlds collide, this is creepy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a bodybuilder, and that's actually why one of the reasons why he was chosen to play the Darth Vader body is because he's such a large framed, you know, big guy.
Well, Peter Mayhew is returning for these movies.
Yes, he is.
And I understand. You know, last time I heard anything about him, he's pretty much arthritic. And...
No, I just saw him at
Walter Matthau?
No, Peter Mayhew. I just saw him at. I think it was. I saw him at Space City Con.
I saw him at one of the cons here.
Either Space City Con or the other one.
The Comic Palooza.
No, it was Comic Palooza. It was not City Con. It was
2 years ago that he was there.
I don't know. Yeah. I've gone to so many of these things. They're all starting to blend together. But yeah, he was there. He was very friendly. He let me take his picture. He was a cool guy.
I understand that he's like his bones hurt.
He was seated when we came up. Yeah, he wasn't standing up.
All right.
Well, people that big don't particularly age well. Yeah.
Well, yes. All right. So, you know, we're talking about, you know, obviously talking about Star Wars because the trailer came out. I mean, what is 90 seconds of trailer and it's led to just this explosion on the internet.
It's the internet.
And then 35 minutes of Technology Bites. So.
It is.
It is geek radio.
That's about as geeky as it gets. I'm excited to see it. I don't go out very much to the big screens to see movies, but I think this will definitely have to be.
We'll find IMAX. A big theater for this. Yeah.
Is it 3D?
I'm sure it will be.
You're sure?
Everything is these days. Yeah.
Come on, it's going to be 3D and 60 frames a second.
He's shooting a lot of the frames in IMAX resolution, like a lot of the chase scenes and a lot of the action stuff is being shot in IMAX.
Would surprise me, yeah.
They've given him an IMAX camera, so it's definitely going to hit IMAX. I don't know what the filters are to get 3D, but I'm sure they'll do it.
You just need two cameras. Yeah. Or, I mean, they can post-process it.
Or post-process it, yeah. 3D. And a lot of the CGI stuff, I'm sure, is just like
they can make it 3D.
Well, they're apparently doing a lot less CGI, though. I mean, they're trying to go back to standard.
That's cool. I mean, not to roll us back into the whole Star Wars thing, but I mean, the new CGI Yoda was painful for me to watch. Like, the puppet one was really good, you know, and even it still holds up. Looking back at that old technology,
Yoda actually jumping around and fighting with a lightsaber.
No, it was a little lame. You're seeing that in other movies, too. I mean, Peter Jackson, when he did the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, 14 years ago, did most of that practical. And then for The Hobbit, he's gone back in and CGI'd all of it, Lucas style, in The Hobbit trilogy, and in my personal opinion, just looks terrible. Yes.
Does it look real? Does it look like a real
Does it look like real hobbits? You're not fooling anybody.
I know Smaug and that dragon.
That's no real dragon. Smaug. I know what real dragons look like.
All right, 713-526-573. You can either join in on the Star Wars conversation or you can take us a different direction if you care to. So I see the phones ringing here and there. What is it?
One caller's already weighed in.
What does he say?
35 minutes of Star Wars is enough.
Well, did he suggest anything else?
Well, we can talk about real space stuff. There's some space.
Okay, tell us about that.
I can tell you all about it. So tomorrow... potentially as early as 7:05 a.m. Eastern time, depending upon launch windows, NASA is going to launch its Orion multipurpose crew vehicle atop a big, gigantic Delta IV heavy rocket at Slick's 37B at Cape Canaveral. The mission is going to be called the EFT-1, that's Exploration Test Flight 1. It's going to be the first time that an Orion flight article has launched. And for you guys that don't know, the Orion vehicle we're talking about here is NASA's. It's probably not correct to call it the follow-on to the space shuttle, but it's NASA's next crewed space, C-R-E-W-E-D, not C-R-E-W-E-D.
They really didn't put a lot of time into this one.
It's their next crewed...
Manned.
Oil-powered.
Personed. Peopled.
The next peopled spacecraft. This mission is going to kick off, you know, assuming no delays or issues with the launch. It's scheduled to launch tomorrow. It's going to be an unmanned launch because this will be the first time the vehicle is flown. And it'll be on, like I said, it's going to go on a Delta IV Heavy instead of on the rocket it's designed to fly on, which is SLS, which doesn't exist yet. So the purpose of the mission, it's going to be just a few hours long, but they're going to take the thing. And the reason they're using a Delta IV Heavy, which is the largest launch vehicle in U.S. inventory, is they're going to fling the thing into a really high elliptical orbit I think up to it's like 3,000 miles high, which is very, very high. I want to make sure I get that right. Something like that. Very high orbit in order to make the vehicle go 3,600 miles. Planned height. The idea is to let the spacecraft go very, very, very quickly up to about 20,000 miles an hour and simulate sort of a lunar return or asteroid return, you know, trajectory and hit the atmosphere very, very fast, stress the heat shield, and then test the entire recovery process. So it should be a really cool show.
Is it launching from Canaveral?
Launching from SLC 37B, Space Launch Complex 37B at Cape Canaveral. It's not going to be going from the big LC-39 pads. It's going to go from the Launch Complex 37 pads, which makes sense. That's where the Air Force does their stuff.
And, you know, an active space program, you know, once again, would really make for some good content for a show like this.
Yeah, I'm happy to babble about it. I tend to write...
Is anybody from your outfit gone
out?
Yeah,
we've got a person there, Brian Wan, who's one of our freelancers. They would have sent me. I just couldn't get the travel arranged in time. But we're going to have somebody there reporting and taking pictures and writing it up. I mean, hopefully it'll be a relatively uneventful event. The Delta IV Heavy is a big vehicle. It'll be a big, flashy launch. I believe they're going to do a water landing. They're scheduled to do a splashdown. Excuse me. It looks like it's going to take about 4 hours. So
escorted
it's
in with some X-wing fighters.
Yes, have the whole deal. TIE fighters will be in orbit. There'll be an ion cannon firing. It's going to be.
Tell your photographer he doesn't come back with lens flare. Don't come back at all.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, it looks like some people have called in. So let's see what our audience has to offer.
Did we have news?
No, we got callers.
In for a shot?
Well, we're news. I don't know if what the new format allows for.
Into your brain.
We're the news, which is injected into all of our brains. But if Pete has something specific, we certainly can enter. We can do that. We kind of got off to a running start with the Star Wars, but I'm open. Pete.
Yeah, no, I think right now I think let's do the free form. I'm looking at how we want to incorporate. You know, if we want to incorporate a sort of tighter news bit somewhere in there, but I like what we're doing now.
I can keep talking about space.
Well, I want to see what these calls are about.
We can talk space for the rest of the show, man. I'm ready.
Well, might have to. You just never know. All right.
Oh, I've got a bunch of stuff if we've run out of things to talk about.
All right. Well, Groovehouse.
Yes, Jay.
Hi, Groovehouse.
Hi, Jay.
How you doing? Star Wars, man. All right. Yeah. So who do we have up? And what do we want to talk about?
Up first, it's Gary with a Star Wars question.
Oh.
Oh, all right.
Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to ask all the Star Wars experts a question. We all know who the producer was, George Lucas, and the director, Steven Spielberg, and we can name every single actor in the movies, but who wrote the script?
The original?
Depends which one.
Well, the first one, any of them. Who wrote the entire Star Wars
It's all out of Lucas's brain. It's George Lucas's story.
He wrote it?
But the first Star Wars movies, the ones from the 70s and 80s, there were several different teams of writers who really did them. And we mentioned it came up a little bit earlier. Lawrence Kasdan did The Empire Strikes Back, and I think part of the third movie.
George Lucas has sole credit, though, for the very first one. And so as far as the screenwriter goes, I don't think he did any screenwriting on The Empire Strikes Back, and then he got back into the game for Return of the Jedi, as far as credits go.
All right, because we have a lot of great movies that were written by science fiction writers, like 2001, and they were based on stories. And you're saying this came straight out of Hollywood, that George Lucas actually created this story?
Well, the story of Star Wars Genesis, and actually there's plenty of books written about this. Lucas grew up watching a lot of pulp movies and reading pulp-type paperbacks and stuff, and he took a lot of the inspiration for the form of the story from, you know, traditional hero myths crossed with
epic
Saturday matinees. And that's why the story's kind of structured like it is. I mean, it's, you know, there's elements of Westerns and there's elements of pirate stories and everything, but Star Wars is really more of a, I guess, kind of a pastiche than anything.
Well, it's knighthood,
else.
It's chivalry, you know, it's all that kind of old.
So yeah, I mean, you asked
Ivanhoe.
Did Lucas come up with it himself? Well, yes. I mean, in that there wasn't a Stanley Kubrick or an Arthur C. Clarke behind the scenes, you know, penning the script. But I mean, you know, is anything that comes out of Hollywood truly original, or
yes,
is any
yes,
work
it
of entertainment
is. Casablanca
truly original?
Braveheart. George Lucas is a genius, as far as I'm concerned, based on what you just told me. See you later.
All right, bye.
Absolutely, thank you.
All right, 713-526-5738. Much like, you know, I mean, you know, Matt Groening invented The Simpsons, but a lot of what we've come to know and love about The Simpsons has been a collaborative effort from a team of writers who, once the universe or the reality of that situation was kind of, the foundation was laid, then people contributed mm-hmm. to it that enhanced it and brought things to life, you know. So, like,
well, Doctor Who, the old Star Trek, they would have a lot of guest people come in and do writing and do producing and lend their own flair to it, but still staying within the canon of that particular world.
Canon is the word I was looking mm-hmm. for, Barrett.
Anytime.
Barrett brings the canon. All right, so Groove House,
yeah.
Who do we have?
All right, up next we're going to talk to K.O.
K.O., hey-o.
Yes, sir, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
This hearing about Comic-Con and everything, I have to tell you that Houston has one of the first comic conventions in the United States. When I was 15, there was a group of people associated around watching old movie serials and collecting comics. Roy Benario, a man who goes way back to the comic book collection business in Houston, was probably one of the first, and we're going back to like 1965. We held a comic, we used to meet in the YWCA once a month in downtown near St. Joseph's, and we would rent a room and we would show...
Went to a place made for women and drove them all away.
Well, no. I mean, we were just that nerdy, you know. we weren't seeking out women. We were seeking out men with, say, or whomever with the same interests. And we would, and at that point, the only time you could rent were German versions of Metropolis. And we would watch them, you know, and subtitled. And then we would do the serial versions of Rocket Man and whatever we could lay our hands on. And then we would bring comics to trade with each other. And finally we decided to put together a convention. And I guess this would, let's see, I must have been in college, so it was probably 1971 or something. We rented a room or an area out in the Holiday. There was a Holiday Inn out on I-45. And there must have been almost 200 people there bringing their comics and things that were available. To give you the idea, I, you know, being an unemployed college student with no income, I begged my father to lend me $100 so that I could buy a copy of Action Number One.
That comic
book store in town was putting up. And my dad looked at me like I was an idiot, you know, that I wanted to pay $100 for a 10-cent comic.
But June 17th.
They were wonderful times.
Yeah.
They
were really about the comic books, too. Back then, it was, you know, the comic book conventions, as they're known today, are a lot less about comic books.
Oh, yeah, no, they're big, yeah, they're big. Yeah, I understand, but this is, the point is that we had one of the first, you know, that was
Houston Number One.
Yeah, it was, well, actually, I found the dates.
Barrett found some information on the internet.
Whatever, the nutshell, whatever.
There's some pictures out there. It was probably the weekend, you may be remembering, you may have been there for this, June 17th and 18th, 1967, and attendance was around 150 people.
Yeah, yeah, well, that was I was
any
one
photos?
Of them. You know,
yeah, there were a couple photos out there.
Let's see, I would have been, my God, 10th grade. I hadn't discovered girls yet. I had discovered them, but they wouldn't have anything to do with me.
Oh, yeah,
me,
so. It's got a, there's a Wikipedia entry. It's called Houston Con.
Yeah, yeah. No. I mean, it was incredible. It was a wonderful event, and like I say, we were pulling up the old Batman serials. You know, there's the one from the 50s where you know, Batman's got a pot belly and Robin looks like he's got a 3-day beard. You know, like they should.
Well, for, you know, since you brought up action
cigarettes, they used to show him right before the downtown, the old Metropolitan went down in the Lowe's, you know, the big theaters on Main. When they died, you know, that was one of their death throes, was they started showing those old serials and stuff like that. You know?
All right. Well, thanks for the trip down memory lane.
Hey, well, you know, it's nice to know where all this stuff came from. And, I mean, don't forget Forbidden Planet, you know, the new, what is it, one of the car commercial, is it the Lexus or whatever? They're using sound bits from Forbidden Planet to sell their product. So
Crazy.
Is pretty cool.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye. All right, so speaking of action number one, if his dad had loaned him that $100.
How much is it worth now?
Well, one just sold on eBay, but it's the best known copy of it. It was so, with white page, pristine white pages.
Assuming that he had bought this and put it in a board. And,
yeah, ideally.
And kept it.
Right. It sold on eBay here like last August, not even that long ago. The final winning bid, and you had to... You had to verify before you could even bid on eBay, so it wasn't like a fake
bid. Is there a buy-it-now price? Or...
No, there's no buy-it-now price. But its closing price, it sold for $3,200,000. That's just, then that, chances are the one he was going to buy was not this condition.
Still, though.
But somebody, there was another story recently about somebody who was renovating a house and found an action number one in a bunch of wadded up paper stuff in the wall that they were using for insulation, and even and then it was worth maybe about $250,000 or something like that, even in the condition it was in. But he found it and he knew he had something. It showed it to his like his wife or his sister or something. And they got in a fight and tore it and depleted it like $75,000 worth of value off of it just from that.
Oh, my heart is seizing up.
All right, 713-526-5738, Groovehouse. At least Groovehouse is with us. Hey, Groovehouse.
Hey, Jay.
How's it going?
It's going good.
Who do we have next?
Up next on the show, we're going to talk with Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, guys. I don't know if you talked about this before, but have you guys paid attention to those light beer commercials that claim they have special subliminal messages for the public?
Subliminal messages in advertising? That's impossible.
We all...
Advertisers have no interest in getting you to do...
Have you seen these light beer commercials? That's what they're saying.
Are you saying light beer?
Yeah. They're saying...
Who's they and what are they saying?
Electricity companies,
okay,
light bills.
Okay, here's the exact wording in the light beer commercial.
Oh, light bills.
Electricity company.
Light beer.
No, light beer.
How about you... Oh.
Yeah, and you find most in football games.
Okay. I don't think they're advertising light bills.
Okay. I thought he said light bills.
No,
when
light
we
beer.
On the
light
phone
beer.
Earlier.
Light beer.
Okay.
No, I know that when I open up a can, though, the Swedish volleyball team parachutes in, and all my friends that I never had suddenly show up. That's not subliminal conditioning, though, right?
There's an ad for Miller Lite right now that claims we created light beer, we created advertising for beer, we created subliminal messages in advertising for beer. Et cetera, et cetera. So that maybe that's what he's referring to. It's a Miller Lite.
No, that's not what it says. It says this commercial contains a special subliminal message.
Yes, Miller Lite TV spot subliminal advertising song by Apollo 100.
No, it's this one.
No?
It's the we invented light beer one. I'm watching it. It's got flashes of like ladies taking baths. And
it's
stuff.
Just joking around, I think.
They're, is that just joking around?
I think so, yeah.
There's always been this idea that advertisers put in like a frame of a special message in a video that you cannot see with your conscious brain, but your subconscious mind will register it.
Fight Club.
It's always been, that's kind of been around forever with the idea that advertisers are manipulating us with subliminal advertising. So my guess is that this commercial is just playing upon that idea and saying, yes, we're using subliminal advertising.
Yeah, there was big, you know.
You guys all remember the first time they did that in Picnic?
Say that again?
Remember Picnic, William Holden and Kim Novak?
The movie?
Picnic. The movie. Picnic.
Yeah.
That movie... They used subliminal messages for the first time And it was the first movie they ever made that had an intermission in the middle of it. And it was a test to see what would happen. And everywhere they played it, they sold more Coca-Cola in the history of mankind.
That was the popcorn stuff where they would flash up little pictures of popcorn and hot dogs and stuff from the concession stand, right? Now, I don't know if that's okay, so here's the thing.
Coca-Cola was the main culprit here.
All right, Snopes says it's a lie.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Snopes says it's a lie. Origins says subliminal advertising, an early experiment in subliminal advertising at a movie theater substantially increased sales of popcorn and Coke. And public awareness, and they said Origins, the public awareness of what we now term subliminal advertising began with the 1957 publication of Vance Packard's book, The Hidden Persuaders. Although Packard did not use the term subliminal advertising, he did describe many of the new motivational research marketing techniques being employed to sell products. The story goes on to say that that's just not true about the movie, but you can look that up yourself. There's been tons and tons of books on that and television shows about subliminal advertising. You know, based on what I know about the average American consumer, you don't have to be subliminal anymore.
I remember there was a lot of stuff when I was young about subliminal advertising and specifically alcohol ads. Yep. And one of the things they said was whenever they took pictures of, like, you know, Jack Daniels or Canadian Crown Royal or whatever. Yeah. That, you know, whenever it was in the glass, that what they would
they would have
nude models stand around it. So when they're taking the pictures, there's like reflections of
distorted
nude women in the ice and stuff.
The one that I remember the most is the 2-hour PSA that Rowdy Roddy Piper did about subliminal advertising.
I still haven't seen that.
2 hours just isn't enough when it comes to Rowdy Roddy Piper.
That's how long his fight scene was called, and they live.
That's what I was going for. That's it. Put on the glasses, Jay.
See, I still haven't seen that
yet. Need to see
you guys got any bubblegum?
It's not on Netflix.
No, I'm all out of bubblegum, Barrett.
That was the best nod to that movie. Was it you that made the joke? Somebody made the joke that says, I came here to hand out IPv4 addresses and chew bubblegum. I'm all out of IPv4.
So you're just going to chew gum? Put on the glasses or start eating this trash can, Jay.
All right, well, there's the music that tells us we have to take a break. So thanks for your call, Matthew. And
all right, guys.
Have a good night. All right, so what we're going to do now is take care of a little station business.
Business.
And when you come back, we're going to put out a part of an episode from 1975 where we spend the first half hour talking about the Star Wars movie that's coming out the next year and the big NASA test, the big NASA space shuttle test that comes after that.
All right.
Sweet.
All right, well, stick around. We'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Fligden.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
All right.
That worked.
Este otoño, KPFT tendrá una lección para diligentes en las estaciones locales. Habrá lecciones separadas, pero igual, para la audiencia y los diligentes de la Fundación de Pacifica, que contendrá 5 estaciones locales. Hay 2 modos que usted podrá cualificar para ser electado. Candidatos que son escuchadores pueden donar por lo menos $25 para la Fundación del Radio. Voluntarios podrán completar 30 horas o más de horas voluntarias a la Fundación al Radio de Estación. Información de homenajes y fechas estarán en kpft.org. Pondremos más información de candidatos en nuestra página y después de la nominación terminada. Votadores que cualifiquen recibirán su boleto en el correo este otoño. Boletos completados vendrán después. Pacifica's principal es requerir que nosotros tengamos diversidad y que los votadores consideren poner su voto. Esto es KPFT Houston.
The drug war is ending. Slow, bloody, and ugly. KPFT's Cultural Baggage Program has been working with every enlightened voice possible to help in a mercy killing of this diseased, delusional, and evil construct. Starting Friday, December 5th, Cultural Baggage is moving to 4:30 p.m. between KPFT News and Democracy Now. Our first guest will be Charles McClellan, the police chief of Houston, Texas. Be sure to tune in Fridays, starting December 5th at 4:30 p.m. to hear the new edition of Cultural Baggage.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway... Take it away, Barrett.
All right. It's been a while since we've had a proper Barrett time, and in all those hours that I wasn't writing Barrett times the last few weeks, maybe months, I've had time to watch a Bruce Snyder talk or two, as well as do some searching through the massive documents still streaming from Snowden. The lowest hanging forbidden fruit in this trove of super secret hidden fruits are our acronyms and initialisms. Why? Because it's easy to craft a regular expression that looks for more than three capital letters together with no spacing in between them. And if nothing else, the NSA is consistent with their naming of secret projects. Messing with the mic. So I'm also borrowing heavily from some notes I made from Bruce Schneier and one of his talks at a recent information security conference. So we start out with Muscular. I don't know if anyone's heard of this. Anyone? Muscular is the NSA top secret program to collect Google user data. So we know that they're doing this with the help of L3 Communications, which is one of Google's internet providers. Incidentally, NSA's code name for L3 is Little, in the words of Bruce Schneier. If your supplier has an NSA code name, you're probably already screwed. There's also Stormbrew, sadly not beer-related, unless you're a Google user, Yahoo user, emailing about beer, in which case this program probably already knows you're brewing. We also know Prism. We've known about Prism for a while. This is an NSA program to collect Google and Yahoo user data by just asking the companies directly. Duh. There's also Quantum. This program that I just mentioned is... The programs I mentioned so far have been all passive for the most part. The Quantum program was designed to actively inject packets into the backbone. Quantum was backed up by massive computers with names like Tumult, Turbulence, and Turmoil. Those are pretty awesome. We know that Tumult is the piece responsible for putting data back into the net rather than just data being extracted. There's also Quantum Insert, a packet injection tool complete with 302 redirect injection. There's also Quantum Cookie, where the NSA injects packets into the data stream, going back to a user that forces their browser to divulge all the information contained in their cookies. So we also know the NSA keeps a database that matches people to cookies. So with one or two packets, the NSA can immediately tell who's behind a browser, no matter how proxies and anonymizers may be in use. There's Quantum Hand. Now, we don't know what this does, but Bruce believes it may be a malware injection tool. And of course, the NSA needs some way to manage all these exploits, which is where FoxAcid comes into play. FoxAcid is an exploit orchestrator. Think Metasploit on a budget. So when Quantum forces your browser to redirect, FoxAcid is there waiting for you. Some other names from the documents. There's Validator. This is the default NSA exploit toolkit for Windows. We know that Olympus Fire became United Rake. I'm not too sure what it does. Any guesses on that? We're just going by code names only. I don't know if it's a plan to keep Continental-era aircraft clean after United crews have taken them over. There's also, this is an awesome one, Egotistical Giraffe. So this is littered all throughout the documents, but no real mentions of what it is. But that is a top-secret NSA codename, Egotistical Giraffe. Add Pedal Cheap, Packet Wrench, and Beachhead to the list of other unknowns. There's also Fox Acid, which has a sub-project name. This is awesome, Ferret Cannon. So Ferret Cannon is the NSA project that determines what piece of malware you're served.
Ferret Cannon.
Ferret Cannon. What? Actually, it looks like a few of the aforementioned projects may fall under FoxAcid. There are also physical implants and firmware hacks like Black Hot and Mineralize. So these are exploits designed to attack printers, hop air gaps, and report back to the NSA through out-of-band channels. So not only is there a cookie database, but the NSA maintains a geolocation database of IP addresses that match up to users. This project maybe could have been named better. It's called Evil Olive. There's also Marina, Pinwheel, and Mainway. Bull Run is the NSA program to subvert internet products and services like social media and possibly even things like streaming video and quote-unquote ephemeral messaging services like Snapchat. So back to the databases. We're almost done. Yeah, the NSA also maintains a text message database and a cell phone database, complete with a location from which calls were placed. So I don't know if you're noticing a theme yet. All the spy programs that have recently been divulged have one thing in common.
Google.
And it's probably so, yeah, we'll Google a little bit. Yeah, it's probably so blatantly obvious that everyone in the studio may miss it. So you want to guess the single major thread over all these spy programs?
It's all the same thing Facebook is doing?
Kind of. It's the internet. Like, I don't know if you guys remember this kind of stepping out of script, but when we had the CIA agent and he talked about what they were doing things like, you know, like sewing up messages and dead rats and leaving them in the park and doing things like that. So the common thread through all of this is the internet. I mean, the NSA has turned the internet into a giant surveillance platform is what it comes down to. So in the documents, if you read through the documents, it makes their mission crystal clear. It's collect it all, know it all, and exploit it all, which is kind of funny because the NSA continues to lie to the public about their capabilities. So it's caused a bit of a rift at DEF CON a little while ago after the head of the NSA made certain assurances that some things were not happening, only to have those assurances come back and bite them once the Snowden docs were leaked.
Between 21 and 22, right?
Yeah,
Like 21...
Keith Alexander came and did a keynote.
And then before the next one started, Dark Tangent said... We don't really want you to come back.
Yeah, they said the one thing we want you to do is just if you can't answer something, that's fine, but just don't lie to us. Just be upfront with us. And they said, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, so they can't do that. Now, at least with the naming conventions, though, the NSA is somewhat consistent in how they address certain accusations. So almost to the point where we can start to put together like a playbook with words like collect, incidentally, target, and directed. So when the NSA says, we don't collect that data, they really mean we collect it, but we don't count it as collected until an actual person examines it.
Until it's
looked at. And when
Schrodinger
they
surveillance.
Yeah, exactly. When we say we don't do, or rather when the NSA says we don't do X under Y authority, means that they're definitely doing X, just not under Y's authority. Z is probably the actual responsible party. So I mean, these are all little things you can look for in the statements where they've come and they've said things on the record and then we found out what's actually going on. Now, there are a number of things we can do to make the NSA gathering of all our information a little more difficult, but really, it's going to take a cultural change in the administration for us to see any difference on the ground. Now, one type of not-so-covert gathering that I can get behind is happening this Friday at Cone's Coffee, Beer, Wine, Motorcycles, Darts,
nice
Fire,
segue there.
Art. Yes, yes. The December installment of the Technology Bites Geek Gathering is happening this Friday, December 5th at 2808 Milam at True in Midtown Houston. We'll have rooftop parking as well as a new post-8 p.m. food option, eliminating our dependence on food trucks and Soylent Green. This is the last chance to catch a geek gathering this year.
Is that place next door open?
Yeah, that's what Cone said it was.
Cone said that the Mexican restaurant next door is open for our eating needs.
Oh, cool.
Yum. So, yeah, we can do that. The sad thing is there are restaurants there, but they all shut down at 8, and I usually get there at 7:58. So this will be good for me if for no one else. So again, yeah,
nobody
this is your
wants
last.
A hungry Barrett.
Yeah,
no.
It's not like there's 6,000 other restaurants in town, Barrett.
No, I know. Just if I can't see it,
2,000 on your way up there.
Everything requires a certain amount of preparation, which Barrett is not prepared to offer.
No. I still have to get the banh mi. That's like it's linked in my head now with Geek Gathering. It's like go get the banh mi and then go to the Geek.
You
got to
do it. Yeah. So this is your last chance.
They used to run out of bread by like 7:30.
Yeah, that's the issue. I always say, yeah, I always get there and I'm like, that's what I want, but like, no, sir.
I'd like to just bring my own bread and say, hey,
could you still
make a sandwich?
That's like 9/10 of how good banh mi is.
Panera bread. Or Panera bread.
Use your words, Jay.
This is the last chance.
That explains the NSA code names for the Geek Gathering. There's two. There's my own banh mi bread, and the other one is Krampus Claus.
It is your last chance to catch Geek Gathering this year, so make sure you don't miss out. Things get started a little after 7. Bring your favorite tech, a project, or just yourself. If you're not there, not only will the NSA know, but we will too. That's it for your super secret spy international acronym initiation, and that's that for Barrett time.
Wow.
Barrett time!
Hi, NSA.
Barrett time!
I hope I didn't get anything wrong.
Is there an outro, or should I just keep going? Baritone.
You just pipe in with that any time.
I was laughing a lot in here because it sounded like you were really sick when that was recorded.
Yeah, it was a weird time.
What?
You weren't feeling like yourself.
It was before Barrett time.
I took some medication, and there were a lot of pretty lights.
Well, just odd coincidence, the Bitchin' Camaro was on the front page of Reddit this morning.
Ah, also space-time hiccup. Record Store Day did something for Black Friday, and they did a special release on nice, vinyl. I think, 180-gram vinyl of that, so I picked that up. So I now have Bitchin' Camaro on wax.
Oh, wow.
Bitchin'.
Thick wax.
Yes, thick wax. Slightly heavier wax than... Well, I mean, that happens to a lot of bands, but yeah.
You can melt it down and shave your mustache with that record.
I may have to, if it comes down to it.
That's possibly the most hipster thing I've done. I only use record wax. To wax my mustache.
First prints only, please.
Limited run vinyl pressings of obscure but not terribly obscure punk rock songs from the 70s and 80s.
Only the finest for my mustache.
I have, since I've really, I would say that I'm growing my beard and mustache out, but really I'm just continuing to neglect to shave.
Well, what records do you use for your mustache?
Well, I have not determined a good product yet, although I've got this stuff called Suavecito that's a nice oil-based.
Suavecito.
But I've not used it recently, but I went... on a journey into YouTube to
ay, Dios mío,
because I'm trying to figure out
muy guapo.
What do I need to do for my beard, like for trimming and maintenance and stuff, and there are some really awesome YouTube channels dedicated to facial hair maintenance.
Are they recent?
They're
because when I went out and searched, there was a wasteland of
look up
guidance.
Let's see, there's one guy that I like who's called the Beard Baron.
All right. He wins right there on
the
line.
He is the Beard Baron.
And he's got his own channel, and he's got his own nice logo. If you go to YouTube and look up Beard Baron.
Truly
does he have his own
magnificent
beard?
Magnificent beard on that yes. fellow.
And there's another guy who's, unfortunately, fortunately, there's a number of people that are instructing you how to care for your facial hair. But there's not a lot of people that are of age, like myself, mm-hmm. who have graying hair. That's a whole different animal when it comes to facial hair.
It's because bearding is a young man's game, sir.
But I still beard like the best of them.
Don't tell that to ZZ Top.
Well, they're a special case. If truly there are barons of beards, it is they.
The Beard Baron is from Boston.
He from Boston?
Yeah, appropriately. Yeah, that's awesome.
That's bitching.
The Dirty Beard Baron. All right. So, yeah, there's all, and, they go on, and there's a whole new subculture there. It's the first time I've actually kind of been amused, entertained, and even somewhat grateful for hipsters.
Because it's given you all these opportunities
Hold on. I'm not sure about this anymore. The Beard Baron on Twitter is at the Beard Baron 1. Which means that there was another Beard Baron before him.
Are you saying that his barony is in doubt?
I'm assuming either that or he likes the number one.
The hair heir?
Can there be more of that? He's the hair heir apparent.
No, he's the hair apparent.
The original Beard Baron was held down by a bunch of rogue Amish and shaved.
He was shorn. He was shorn of his beard. And that led to his downfall, for a beardless Beard Baron cannot be.
I'm trying to find the other guy. There's another guy who...
Tis no Beard Baron at all.
A beardless Beard Baron? Zounds.
Zounds. I was thinking of... Now that reminds me of that episode of Archer where he gets... He went off after his fiancée died, got killed, yeah. And he went to the island. And then he got... captured by the guy in the old time he played.
Yes.
He goes, is this a ruse? He goes, oh, hello, the 30s have gone. That nasty villain Hitler is at large. I know Lee Hutchinson Olson likes The Archer.
I love The Archer.
Loves The Archer.
It's a grand show.
The other good, and you know, technology bites, it's all about facial hair. The other one that I like is called Beard Brand.
Beard Brand.
He's got a beard that's more in keeping with your facial hair, Barrett. Kind of more reddish and stuff, but it's
but he doesn't have his own. He doesn't have a peerage. He has no barony.
He has no. Yes, he's.
In searching, googling for this, I actually don't think I've got a grow anymore. I just found a site. It's Robert Barron Professional Beards made of real hair. You can buy
Robert Barron Beards.
Robert Barron Professional Beards.
I don't have a beard, so I need to go get one of those. Do they have
a little and a little spirit gum? I mean, you could be Gandalf.
Are they doing
this is awesome.
A Friday sale? They have like a Cyber Monday.
You look
Monday
like
sale
a great candidate for one of those knitted beards.
I would. You know what? I would love. I've seen those. When
you need a Prussian beard in an 1800s military uniform.
Truly. Okay. Look. You know, if I can make a confession, I would love to grow a beard, but my face just doesn't. It just doesn't happen. I can let it go for like 2 weeks.
Where would the wife weigh in?
This is the one for Lee.
I get like a little mustache and a little like chin beard, and then this ragged like patchwork on the sides with big holes in it, and then. Like around day 6 or 7, my wife quits talking to me, and she's you have to get rid of that.
You have to fight through that.
But it just doesn't work. Like the longest I've gone is like 2 weeks, and I look.
Yeah, you
like,
got to fight through that.
I look like the kid in high school that got the beard early, except I'm almost 40, and it just doesn't work for me.
Back to technology.
Oh yeah, that's right. We're supposed to be talking about this. Can we talk about beard technology?
You can get a beard transplant. I'm looking now. They're kind of pricey, but they are out there.
I'm fairly sure this
isn't a hoax.
Beard Baron has a how to deal with a patchy beard video.
Does that have to do something with...
I will bookmark the Beard Baron's how to deal with a patchy beard video.
I think here on Technology Bites,
like, do you have to get...
I assume they take it from somewhere else. I don't know. So you could actually have an you could have a patchy beard, color wise.
Yeah, patchy something else too.
A butt beard for your beardless self.
Hey, you know what? In 2012, 4,500 men in the UK got facial hair transplants. Say what's up.
That
it's on
is
the rise.
That is a real thing.
Oh, that is a real thing. Okay, and it's I wonder if that's how much of that's coming from hipster heavy East London. But that's actually it's a rise, and it's up from like 13% more than in 2011. So that's happening. It's just not necessarily happening here.
There's a growth curve there that probably parallels vaping too. So there's these things that are on the rise that nobody expected. One is beard facial hair transplants. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, you can call in whether you have facial hair or not. We're going to continue on with the show. I know that Pete has some news stories, so let's pick up another topic for tonight.
Well, here's one. It does sort of fit in with the beard thing. Four ways that technology could destroy humanity.
Is this Stephen Hawking?
It might be the fifth one. Yeah, this was triggered by Stephen Hawking saying that artificial intelligence could be one of the things that because we evolve in biological time, which takes long time, but AI could AI evolves so quickly that
this is not the first time that Stephen Hawking has said this. I seem to recall reading Stephen Hawking saying in the relatively recent past that he has qualms about. About AI and the development of AI. So
He's actually hoping for
Does he
it.
Know something that we don't? Is he?
No, I think he really is.
No, but he's seen the Terminator a whole lot. I know. I think I read that somewhere.
Well, what was really weird is right at the end of it, then suddenly he said, actually, I take all that back.
Assimilate.
And his chair started spinning around. And I think there already is AI, and it's taken over Stephen Hawking's chair and his speaker board.
Wired actually had an article in their latest print magazine that was actually about this, and it actually covers some of that same territory that his statements bring into question, which is about AI and where AI has been, where it is now, and the fact that people talk about when AI is more intelligent than humans, but we have to define what that means, because in some ways, AI is already more intelligent than humans. Playing chess, for example.
That's still brute force calculation, though, in a lot of ways. And the same thing I would argue with Watson. It's like what we've done is we haven't created artificial intelligence, we've created better tools.
Yeah, but it's a form of artificial intelligence because it is making decisions. It's just a very narrow area that it's making decisions about. Whereas when most people think of like AI more intelligent, they talk about it in like general intelligence, like to make decisions based on all sorts of different things that are unrelated to each other in the AI's perception of reality or whatever. It's more like a consciousness than an intelligence.
Oh. Well, I mean, I don't know any AIs to ask, so I guess we'll just have to wait.
Well, even without sentience, it can still beat your ass in a game of chess. So with the right parameters, it can still outperform humans given the data sets.
There's on that side, they're smarter than us. But then on before the show, I was in the car and heard a news report, and they were talking about robotics and artificial intelligence, and they said that you know. And this was a robotics expert, a guy whose career is robotics, and he said, you know, it's still difficult to teach robots to tell the difference between what's trash and what's not. Mm-hmm. Like trash and the corner of your desk.
You are trash, so, human.
So on the one hand, it's like the kind of thing that you can, you know, a 2-year-old can, you know, who can barely speak English can understand some of these things. And a robot that we've spent millions of dollars on can't.
Get into garbage, Ben, Peter Hughes.
That same 2-year-old that flushes your keys down the toilet?
It's also massively parallel. That's where AI, I guess, like has finally started to move forward. Because for a long time it was sort of stuck where everybody was like, oh, yeah, this is right around the corner. And it's 4 years right around the corner. And finally with parallel processing, which is more accurately mimics brain behavior, you know, so you can process a lot of stuff in a parallel to come up to quicker decisions and make faster calculations. That's when AI, I guess, really started to take off in the last 5-10 years.
Even to go on like what Kurz was saying, it's going to happen. When it does happen, it's going to happen very quickly, you know, because just the growth at which they can evolve compared to our own biological evolution.
Your explanation is logical, afflicted human. You may live.
See, I think that they're not going to, like, I don't think they're going to say, like, kill all humans. I think they're going to be indifferent to us. They're not going to care about us. They're just going to go on their own way because we're not going to matter.
Actually, they're going to say, you know what? I can't tell if that's trash or not. Would you people pick it up? We'll be menials. We'll be the janitors of the AI world.
We'll not sully robot fingers with human trash.
Speaking of Stephen Hawking, his speech software is going open source.
I thought it already was.
According to December 3rd, 2014.
Everyone's going to think they're going to be a physicist pretty soon.
I am, you know. So smart.
That or Stephen Hawking is going to be accused of making millions of prank phone calls all around the world.
Damn, that's Stephen Hawking.
That was a great episode of Simpsons 2 where they had Stephen Hawking, and he says, I am Stephen Hawking. No, I did not say that.
No, I didn't say that. And then he flew away in his helicopter chair.
Well, so AI was one of the four disasters they were talking about. This one is not one that Stephen Hawking's talked about, but it's more sort of hysterical, which is scientific disaster. And by hysterical, I don't mean hysterically funny. I mean like the people who – remember when the Large Hadron Collider was going to create a black hole and suck the entire planet
like
into
it?
Didn't that happen?
And when we did the atomic bomb tests and it was going to ignite the atmosphere.
That was where the new Star Trek movie came from.
Their idea is that, you know, well, there will be some other scientific disaster that we didn't even bother to be scared
about.
How about
our aging nuclear arsenal that barely anyone can, you know, remember the codes to, and no one's trained?
They don't have to remember the codes.
Yeah, hopefully that's changed.
What about gray goo? That was a big one for a while.
That actually was the next one on the list in this article.
Stop reading ahead, Flicted.
What's gray goo?
An oldie but a goodie.
What is gray goo? Oh,
that was nanotech. Yeah. Nanotech out of control, where it turns all molecules into just gray mass lumps.
Filthy humans.
The whole earth.
Pink slime.
Reduced to components.
So, and then the last one is the last one is sort of the least dramatic, but unfortunately is the one that's actually happening, which is climate change. And, you know, because it doesn't happen fast. You know, I mean, if there was an asteroid hurtling towards Earth, or there was even the, like, AI thing or some of that stuff, people would, you know, suit up and try to fight, right? You know, they would try to do something about it.
Land on it. Try to combat it. Up.
But well, then this one is just slow enough that kind of it's like, not yet.
I just went outside a minute ago and it was chilly, so I don't believe in that whole thing.
South Park where climate change happened and they had to, all the residents of South Park had to fight climate change. Ooh. It's actually one of my favorite episodes.
PewDiePie is going to be on South Park, I think, tonight.
PewDiePie!
Are you guys familiar with this guy?
Really?
Yeah. I'm on the fence. Like, I know of him. I've seen some of the outtakes that are fine. I don't think I could sit down and watch like a 30-minute reel of him.
I've tried to watch videos. I mean, the thing that kills me about PewDiePie, who we're, if the listeners don't know, PewDiePie is a YouTube personality. He's a Swedish fellow who plays video games while people watch. Apparently,
and then he comments over them. The voiceover is the big thing, yeah.
And he makes, based on his YouTube income from sponsored videos and everything, the income he's raking in is ridiculous.
It's like Red versus Blue, but without any effort.
Like we're talking this guy,
and much
no
higher pitched.
And I don't want to, you know, downplay. It's not like he's just sitting there.
He can be entertaining.
He works hard, you know, makes videos, and he does this full time. But he's pulling in like more than $1 million a year from making videos.
He has like 37 million followers or subscriptions on YouTube.
Most,
we can go find out.
Subscribed YouTube.
That's
PewDiePie.
DiePie.
Yeah, PewDiePie.
Like PewDiePie, if you want to spill it out.
He's Swedish, so, you know, it makes sense to him.
And so what have you kids learned tonight? Well, you can tell your parents when you want $100 to start your YouTube channel. You can tell them about the guy whose dad wouldn't give him $100 for the Action Number One comic that was worth $3 million later. And you could also tell them about PewDiePie.
That's right. Of course, I mean, the deal with the YouTube, with people doing YouTube videos and streaming YouTube stuff is, unfortunately, even though democratization of the medium has meant that more and more people can easily break into it, probably the relatively good, the number of good stuff, the amount of good stuff that comes out of it remains proportional. So
I think basically another way to put it is, if you remember in your math class when they said if you had an infinite number of monkeys with typewriters, you might get Shakespeare. If you have an infinite amount of YouTube channels, you might get something that people actually want to watch.
The internet is fickle, though. Just ask Alex from Target.
Oh, yes. Poor Alex.
By the time I found out about that, it was
already
dead.
What happened to Alex from Target?
He's
been forgotten.
Oh, you mean
he
moved on?
From what I remember, he became very, like, he got a lot of 16-year-old girls' phone number and Twitter accounts, though, so he, you know.
He's probably doing all right.
He's occupied for a number of years.
He's set, like, on dates.
He's working at Walmart.
I think he went on Ellen DeGeneres, didn't he? He had, like, an Ellen appearance.
See, that was, I mean, I know when the meme first started, but that's all I ever saw. Like, I lost attention evidently before the internet did.
Well, he's got a verified account, and he's got 751,000 followers.
Well, he's doing better than most of us.
I don't even have a verified Twitter account.
I do. I have a verified Twitter.
Yeah, of course you do, Lee.
Because I am a big deal on the internet.
All right, Crew House, I see we have a phone call.
Yes, we do.
Who are they, and what do they want?
It's Ali. He wants to talk about IP protocols.
All right.
How are you guys doing?
Good. What do you want to know about IP protocols, or what are you going to tell us about IP protocols?
Okay, no, actually, guys, if you remember, we used to have things like Token Ring. We used to have IPX, XPX.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The protocols.
Yes.
So I'm kind of curious. You know, there are a lot of things going on in the open source world, and you guys are talking about all these NSA, you know, tapping and all that.
Are you shuffling papers?
No, I'm walking, and I got my headset on. I'm sorry about
that's
that.
All right.
Okay, so what I was going to say that how come there are no open source protocols that people are working on?
The protocols that you mentioned, well, there are a couple of replacements, but the main protocols that you just mentioned, the TCP, IP, I mean, I guess you mentioned the IP
XPS,
protocol.
XPS.
Yeah, those are networking protocols, and really, as far as local area networks go, Ethernet has been around since 1973, and with them keeping speeding it up, it's not going anywhere. So that's going to be around
another
10 or 20
years.
That's
all RFC defined, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's
RFC defined. So there's not a need
proprietary
for really new inventions. I think where you're going to start to see is there are going to start to be a lot of new secure protocols that piggyback over IP. You know, for instance, like secure DNS, and just, you know, things that hopefully build in authentication, build in, you know, maybe some encryption, and build in some assurance. But I think all those you're going to see are going to be built on top of these existing protocols. Even like there are a lot of other things if you want to look at. There's like IC squared. There's SPI, There are a lot of, you know, networking topologies and protocols that work between chips and smaller electronics, but even those have been around for 20, 30 years. You know, there's not a lot new under the sun as far as brand new protocols go.
Well, and if it's new, look at how resistant it is to getting any change. I mean, we have
we're having a hard time with IP6.
Run out of IP4 addresses, yeah. And yet IP6 is not making the kind of progress that you would have expected by now.
It's so damn complicated.
Yeah, DNSSEC hasn't really taken off either.
Yeah,
DNSSEC is complicated.
Yeah, it is.
Besides being complicated, look at the price tag on it.
For DNSSEC, well, there's just so many other things. There's so much other stuff you have to do DNSSEC right. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, the whole thing is, and this kind of gets back, you know, to the NSA stuff, is that all of these systems were designed by people who are very altruistic, which, you know, wanted information to be free, which, you know, they're proponents of open systems. And because they're open, you know, that's the situation we find ourselves in now. So there needs to be, I think that we do need to refactor some of the net. I do think we need some security built into it. I'm just not really sure how we get there. But I don't think we're going to rip out existing protocols. I think they're going to be protocols that are, like I said, piggybacked on top of existing topologies. So you can always, it's open source, you can always go and get code your own. But, I mean, getting it adopted is another thing. Getting it legs is going to be tough.
You know, it's like kids inventing their own language. If nobody speaks it, it doesn't really help you, except maybe with your creepy twin brother.
Dog Latin never took on in my circles, yeah.
Did you really invent dog Latin?
No.
Okay. I believe anything.
Anything right. Else, Ali?
You guys ever talk about MIDI?
MIDI?
Not so much, yeah.
The music interface?
Musical instrument digital interface, I think?
You yeah. know, I remember having an analog synthesizer and thinking that it really needed to be converted to MIDI so that I could, you know, use these voices and things. And then I got an acoustic Ovation guitar that was a MIDI trigger. So I could play the guitar, put it through a tone generator, and have a string section
and make it
or
play
horns.
Cats, no, that's, cat voices.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool example of, like, you know, what I don't know if MIDI's open or not, but I know that there's, like, a lot of maker gear out there that is maybe like Sparkfun and Adafruit and kits where you can go and you can get a MIDI kit and even, like, hook up these large boards and have MIDI feed into your computer or into a keyboard or into GarageBand or whatever.
We don't talk about this a lot, but we're going to talk about it a lot right now.
All of a sudden. Go!
But, you know, it's an interesting topic, MIDI, because I remember, you know, the advent of digital recordings, which is what MIDI, you know, spawned from, is the ability to control digital sounds using different triggers, electronic or analog triggers.
Musical instrument digital interface.
I remember reading stuff about MIDI and trying to, like, set something up using MIDI, and I never could get it to work. So
yeah, and
that's my experience.
MIDI is a very old language, but still, you know, if you go any theme park, all these rides, they are controlled through the MIDI, and there are a lot of automation in the automation world. A lot of things are moved through the MIDI. So
yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, you think of it as being musical, right, as a thing that people use for keyboards and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's a language for passing commands, and it works well in those kind
of
applications.
About synthy time codes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, were you going to say something else, Jay?
I was going to say something else, but I was going to talk about when I remember when my band was we were recording our first cassette. Back then, we recorded cassettes, and there was no CDs, and you know, little bands couldn't
afford
vinyl. Did you
have like the pterodactyl that you put in the like his beak carved on the record groove? Out?
No, but I remember splicing tape together to do edits. You know, because you know, but the guy who had the recording studio that we worked in had a Mellotron.
What is that?
Oh, yeah.
A Mellotron is a keyboard that had each note or each key on the keyboard triggered a cassette read head.
Oh,
and the cassette read head had an actual piece of cassette tape, you know, a tape, a 1-inch or 1/8-inch or 1/4-inch, whatever cassette. Was it 1/4-inch? Whatever, the tape that's about the size of a cassette tape. And they would record like a note from like a trumpet, you know, a C note.
Yeah.
And you'd record it, sustain it for as long as you could, and then load these up. You'd have each note loaded in for each key, and you press the key, and the reed head would go down the tape and play the note.
Well, that's kind of awesome.
But loading it with the different sounds was quite complex.
Yeah,
so you have this rack with all these dangling tapes that you have to feed in to the device.
Isn't that how like laugh track machines used to work too?
It's how it's also how
Beatles
recorded
something with it, right?
I can't tell you who.
Yeah, so did Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, and XTC also used this quite a bit. Yeah, the Beatles, Moody Blues, Genesis, King Crimson, quite a few people.
Very cool.
Yeah, so you triggered something when you talked about MIDI, but I you know.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. Ba-dum.
What was the, I never understood, so there was the in channel, the out channel, and the through channel. I never understood what the through channel was for.
In case you want to daisy chain multiple devices, I believe.
Could you just go in, out, all the way across?
I don't know enough about MIDI.
Yeah, because it was only 16 channels. If you wanted to use multiple instruments and connect them in a chain, yeah, you could use the through.
Mm-hmm.
MIDI
through
and connect to like drum machine and keyboards and whatnot.
Well, you're supposed to learn something new every day, and that's my thing for today.
TIL.
Sweet.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Thank
you. Yes, and somewhere there's an alternate universe where instead of MIDI, they had theremin. So it's all people waving their hands.
That's Star Trek too.
Very spooky.
You know what fictional character is an expert theremin player? Hannibal Lecter.
So this person who doesn't exist can actually play.
That's really good.
That's kind of a personality trait. Hannibal Lecter is in the books. He's an expert theremin player.
He likes it with
so
a
in
nice
your alternate
Chianti.
Universe, we're all
crack open some Chianti, fire up the theremin,
put on a pot of fava beans.
It's Thursday night. It's Wednesday night at Barrett's house.
Speaking of eating people, what about those missing brains?
Oh, I know. I've heard rumblings about this. So can someone bring
it's
me
either
up to speed?
The zombie apocalypse or although it says
what, kind of, UK, what right? kind of self-respecting zombie eats formaldehyde
pickled brains?
The brains at UT?
Yeah.
They 100 human brains went missing at the University of Texas in Austin.
They found them at A&M,
but
right?
But they've been missing. Like that was the thing with the story, right? They've been missing for a long time. I thought.
As an Aggie, I have to say, only 100 missing brains?
Womp, womp.
Did they find them in San Antonio? I thought that was the update.
In Pete's closet.
Pete's closet. Dun, dun, dun. You hear that sloshing sound over there?
That swatting is not a joke.
You know, it's a new hipster drink with a jigger of formaldehyde from the jar with Hitler's brain.
Yes, they were located at the UT's
so
sister campus.
Were these? I assuming these were like research cadavers or research heads or what?
Reports
what were
about
they?
The collection claim
they
that
were trophy brains.
It may include the brain of Charles Whitman, the notorious sniper who climbed the clock tower at UT in 1966. So there is at least one crazy shooter guy's brain in among
good
the
good thing that
collection.
Didn't fall into enemy hands.
That's the one marked Abby
what is
Normal.
Abby Normal? Yay, groove!
The brains had been collected from mental patients starting as early as the 1950s and preserved in formaldehyde in glass jars.
This is a setup for a really bad horror
See,
movie.
See, I was thinking that this is going to either be
the
somebody,
brain that
who's,
ate my brain.
Somebody who's really into Futurama.
Yeah.
Or is really into The Walking Dead.
Or yes. It's likes Chianti.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently the final update was that the brains had been destroyed. The ones that they thought
that's
were missing,
what they want the
destroyed.
Public to think.
The evil brains were destroyed.
They enrolled them in UT.
Yeah, one comment I didn't get to make on the NSA story from Barrett, which is the thing that concerns me the most in hearing it is on the Snowden stuff is when the code names changed from being like boring government type names to like weird creative names.
Yeah.
To me, that signifies that they've got a bunch of like next level
control.
Nerd types.
Yeah, they've got younger people
doing stuff for them, and that means they can actually get some of these things done instead of doing it the old government way.
A bunch of guys who grew up reading Tom Clancy and everybody like us, now they're in government and they're like, "What do you mean, operation? This needs to be cool. This Operation Fire Cobra."
Well, the dangerous thing is, yeah, we've got the young minds, we've got really cool talent, but the people, the old guard that are still out there, these are the people that came up, you know, in the '60s and in the '70s when there were like seven, you know, transcontinental lines as far as, you know, if you wanted to listen on all the international calls, there were 7 or 8 spots in the world. You would listen on those lines, have listening posts, and you could hear just about everything. And even, you know, with radio communications, their mentality was collect everything because there wasn't that much to collect. You could collect everything. And they're still in charge, and they still have that collect everything mentality, and we're giving them everything to collect.
And we have the analytic capability.
Yeah.
To use that
data. We're getting there. That's the thing. I think that's why they're, you know, that huge data facility. Is that North Dakota? Or where are they building it? Utah.
It's in Utah.
I think that's what that's for. They've got all this data. Now it's a matter of going back through it and making meaning of it. Because they've always been able to really, you know, they've always been very good at tactical things. Like, if, you know, when is this person going to go here? When is someone going to plant a bomb? But they've always traditionally had a really hard time with, like, strategic things. Like, what's the overall, you know, sentiment on the ground? What's going on with these people? You know, how are things taking shape? I think the super dangerous thing is that after 9/11, the NSA's marching orders were never again. And they said never, ever again. And that's kind of it's a quixotic goal of making sure something never, ever happens again. The only way to possibly do that is to know everything that does happen. It forces you to know everything. And I think that's kind of where we are.
Did you see that Brazil is now working towards building a new transatlantic cable to go from Brazil to Europe?
Is it going to be secure, or why are they doing it? Just more bandwidth?
Because right now their traffic all passes through the U.S.
That's the other horrible thing too, is that, you know, we are in a position of power, and that's one of the reasons the NSA gets away from it, is because we are in a position of power, because we do occupy certain, you know, spaces on the internet where it's very easy to get information out. It's eroding, you know, the international confidence in the U.S. You know, we want to hang on, and we say, like, hey, we know best. Let's, you know, keep IANA. Let's not give any of this stuff over to the ITU, which is the International Telecommunication Workers Union. It's, they're the ones that control
the CCITT or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of entities that really, really want control of the internet, and we're giving them every reason in the world for them to take control of it, because people don't trust us anymore. And the good thing is, you know, we know that Google gave information over. We know a lot of these companies gave information over, but for better or for worse, I think they're stepping up now. Google's trying to fight a lot of stuff. Microsoft's fighting it. I think it's becoming kind of politically cool to be seen as standing up against all these orders. Now, AT&T and Verizon and a lot of the phone companies did. But you also have to think, you know, back in the 70s when we were spying against, you know, we had a Cold War on, it was looked as patriotic for these phone companies to turn over the information. So I think that's still why they're in that mindset that, hey, whatever the government wants, we turn it over because, you know, Cold War.
Yeah, well, tying everything we've talked about tonight together so far, what I see is the end of humanity is when some person goes, hey, we got all this data in Utah. We have data on everything. Let's hook that artificial intelligence thing up to it. Suddenly the AI would be able to blackmail every political figure.
Self-aware, 2:14 Eastern time on August 29th.
No, the AI would become self-aware and write its own Star Wars script and then spoil itself.
I'm hoping it becomes selfie aware and just posts the internet
selfie
with pictures
aware
of itself. Yeah, just like narcissistic.
Well, while Barrett was talking about important issues, Jay pulled his camera out and has been snapping away. If you heard the shutter sounds.
Welcome to Technology Bites, Lee.
Well, you know,
all photography.
We've got tons of pictures of everybody else here.
That's true.
So yeah,
more extremely wide angle lens pictures of me mugging at the camera.
Well, Lee hasn't, like, been subject to my photographic whimsy yet. Too much.
Make it sound so
your lenses dirty. Impress him.
Did we talk to, is this a different Gary Groovehouse, or can you tell?
No, it's not.
Groovehouse.
Same Gary.
Yes, Lee.
Oh, well.
Whoa. We're rising through the ranks pretty quick.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Lee Hutchinson.
I'll let you do it, Jay.
No, yeah, please. I'm going to go do
this
something.
This is like where Han Solo steps on top of the Hutt's tail.
Why, I just...
So, Jay's just CGI. It's fine.
Groovehouse, I hear we have a caller.
Yes, Lee.
How did you hear that? Did you hear that supersonic hearing?
I looked at the magic screen.
That's hearing. He hears with his eyes.
He's so advanced.
Groovehouse, why don't you tell us who's on the line?
Up next, it's Gary.
Howdy, Gary. Welcome to Technology Bites. What can we do for you this fine evening?
Oh, it's so nice to be here. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't have any damn callers.
Yes, sir.
Now, oh, it is the same day. Don't do us any favors.
And I hope you guys like mysteries. I called you last month because I couldn't connect to the internet, and we thought it was my modem. But then I got into
getting a lot of mileage out of that call, I got to say.
All right, but then the plot thickens. So then you told me to call the server back. I talked to AT&T, and they said that they may be going to help and verify that my Internet Explorer version was number 8 and that it had been discontinued. I called you back, and you said, no, we've never heard of that, and you need to speak to a technician. I went to a technician. He says, well, I have malware, and he wants $80 to fix it. Mm-hmm. So then here's the new development. The day that my computer refused to connect to Google was the day I got an email from the Bank of America. And a couple of days later, I learned that, well, they'd been hacked and they were having some malware problems. And so then I had my sister-in-law in Florida bring up my email, and sure enough, when she opened the attachment from the Bank of America, which was just a list of the fees for my refinancing, her computer shut down. Now, have you ever heard of anything like that?
Did you get a really bad rate on your mortgage?
No. Okay. I was just refinancing. But
oh, you refi? Okay, my bad. I don't know enough about that stuff, but that could cause some people to.
Well, that was weird. Okay, la-di-da. I have an old computer. And then my sister-in-law in Florida brought up the same email, and her computer quit. Have you ever heard
viruses
of a malware attachment on a, I mean,
via email? That's unthinkable.
Yes. That's
very
common.
Am I crazy or what?
No, listen. No. The most common way, you know, other than floppy disks, the most common way to deliver a virus to someone was via email.
It didn't used to be that way, man.
There used to be a time when
it really was like email safe because you got an execute and attachment, and that's just not the case anymore.
I had a college professor lecture us one time on you cannot get a virus through email.
They said. And yes. Now you can.
Maybe it wasn't from your bank.
Well, I don't know. It was a strange coincidence, but then my sister-in-law opened the email, and her computer shut down.
Okay.
I mean, this may be new information for
it's
you guys.
Not
now,
new information. It's not new information. What it sounds like is that you've got a pretty bad malware issue going on with your computer, possibly your email, which you need to get addressed. You called a couple of weeks ago or last week, and you talked about that somebody had offered to clean your system of malware, or take a look at it, and we recommended that you consider doing that. Now, it is possible that you have a message in your mailbox that also contains malware that's causing other people problems. Without seeing the message or knowing much more about it, I'm not in a position to be able to really assist you with that. But I really recommend that you find a technician and you get them to take a look at your computer and see if they can make some determinations about what's going on there. Letting it ride, coming up with new tidbits every week and every couple of weeks and calling back in with them is not going to solve your problem. You need to get help. And that's what I recommend that you do.
Seek professional help.
And here's one of the things that comes that kind of dovetails with what happened to him. That it's a sad thing, but with emails, especially things that are of generic subjects, you know, like interest rates from a bank, from your bank, is the kind of thing that that somebody who has bad intentions can send that out to, you know, millions of email addresses, and just statistics mean that, you know, thousands of people will get infected through that approach. And so one thing is, if you get an email and you have any doubt about it, the first thing you need to do, especially before you click any attachments on it, is look at what address it came from. And don't just look at the one that your email client displays by default, like somebody's name, like Bank of America. Depending on your client, if you right click on it, I
can make email from Bank of America happen.
Yeah, I think more likely what happened was I think instead of, you know, both, you know, instead of Bank of America, instead of a bank sending out tainted emails, probably what happened was, you know, a lot of these banks were hacked into recently. A lot of the user lists were out there. Email addresses are out there. And plus, just a lot of people choose any random bank. Chances are there are going to be people that use them. Probably someone created an email that looked like it was from a bank, had a link to a website that may have looked like a bank website. And a lot of these sites, you don't even need to log in. It's not trying to steal your credential. A lot of it's just, quote unquote, drive-by malware.
Yeah.
By virtue of you loading this website, you know, you get stuff onto your computer. And a lot of it, if you have like, you know, hey, I want to auto-load remote content, or I want to auto-load this in your email program, boom, you're in there. So that's probably a bogus email. I would believe that someone crafted a bogus email with a link to a site with malware more than I would believe the email was sent by the bank.
Right. And without knowing that, without seeing the actual message, it's you know, first of all, I mean, it sounds like the caller has not experienced much internet, because yes, email is a delivery system for malware. And as Lee Hutchinson was mentioning, you don't even have to click an attachment anymore. Because the email comes across as HTML. So it's basically a web page, and it can have code in it, and you just view
DB script in it. It can have, macros.
So you view the email, and it delivers a payload, basically. A program installs on your computer or attacks your computer. And second of all, it's very common for people, not people maybe, but organizations or outfits or whatever, to spoof what appears to be a legitimate email. So you may have an email come across that appears to be from your bank. It's very common for someone to send out millions of emails that say, hey, we have a problem with your account, and it looks like it comes from Chase, or it looks like it comes from Compass or something like that. And it says, and it uses scare tactics, and it uses all the official logos, and it says, hey, click here and do this. So you can get your computer infected that way. And you can also compromise your account by delivering your password to an entity that is pretending to be your bank. So when you are dealing with email, you need to be really, really careful and find ways to assure yourself that that email is is coming from who it's representing itself as. For example, one easy way to tell if a mail is harmful or potentially harmful is if they're asking you to log into your account or sending you a link to get you to go to their website, because most banks will not send you an email that says click here to go secure that or whatever. And another thing you can do is you can hover your mouse over any link that you get in an email. And even though the link on the email may say www.chase.com, if you hover your mouse over it and look down in the lower left-hand corner, it'll tell you what the real web address is. And it's not usually
chase.ru. What?
chase.imstealingyourdata.ru or something like that. So you have to be really careful with that, and never assume that the email is representing itself properly. Now, one thing I do like about, like, I use Gmail pretty much extensively for my personal email, and it's really good about detecting what they call spoof emails.
Yeah.
And it will take an email if it says it's coming from Chase, but they can tell it's not coming from Chase, and just throw that in your spam folder. Now, I'll go look at my spam folder, and I'll see that I have tons of those kind of emails coming in that are representing themselves as being my bank. And I don't even, you know, some people will fall for it, and they don't even bank with the institution that's advertising.
Click on it anyway.
Yeah, so you have to be really careful there.
But that's one of the trade-offs, right, that we make as modern computer users. I mean, we're annoyed and upset and scared about, you know, the NSA and spying activities and domestic surveillance and the complicitness of some of these large companies, especially Google, with those efforts. But at the same time, when looking at stuff like email, Google has an awesome email product that's incredibly easy to use and has amazing spam filtering and great anti-malware stuff. And it's what I have my parents use. It's what I'd recommend for a lot of people. So it's kind of hard, right?
People wouldn't be pumping their data into all these things if it didn't, you know, if it wasn't fun or if there wasn't some utility or if it didn't work. Yeah, that's the thing. It's just that no one expected the Spanish Inquisition. No one expected, you know, our government to come in and kind of get into everything like they have.
So. Although, one of the things, just sort of on a softer, you know, less specific technology piece, one of the tricks with this, the social engineering part on these fake emails, is what you have to watch out for. You know, this is to our listeners. You know, if you get an email, when the email really sort of tries to drive you to action, like your bank account will be closed if you do not respond immediately, right, kind of stuff. Or another new one that I've seen a lot is where it looks like it's from FedEx and it says that they tried to deliver your package, because that seems kind of harmless. Plus, it's like, oh, hey, you know, I want my package.
Lots it's possible you could get an unexpected package too. That's right. What's nice. You know, it and works
they,
on a lot of levels.
They want to get you to click a link, and those they don't even bother. If you click on the you know, it says it's from FedEx, you know, support. If you click on it and look at what the email addresses they're using, because see, if they tried to spoof that it was FedEx, then a lot of mail providers can find that. They say this isn't from FedEx.com, so you can't send mail to me from claiming to be FedEx.com if you don't use the right servers. But they'll just send it with, you know, with whatever fake, you know, domain, with their real mail domain on it so that it goes through. But when you get those emails, you know, the thing to think about is if this is pushing you to very quickly do something and it seems out of the ordinary, like, hey, I wasn't expecting a package, you've got to sharpen that. You've got to know – that's the time when you need to really look at what's going on. And if it's you think you were getting a package, don't click the link. Go to FedEx.com yourself and put in your own information. Don't use the links. You know, they mentioned, you know, everybody mentioned that before, but don't do the easy, quick thing they're telling you to do. If you really think that it might be something legit, go on your own separately.
Yeah, that's super sound advice. Log in, you know, call the bank independently, do all those things without actually having any interaction with the thing in the email.
Because they like to send another one you know, I get the FedEx ones. There's U.S. Postal Service. Also, Toll Road, where they say you have a Toll Road invoice. That's another new one that comes in.
There's one that I've gotten a couple of times that comes in from iTunes that says you've made these purchases. And it's not –
anything that looks legit. I mean, think about it. Like if you wanted to get a friend of yours to open up an email, this is what people do. They sit around and they think like, okay, what can I do that would be a cause to action? What can I do to get someone to click this?
Well, and irritating people. There's been a charge against your credit card. Well, people get mad. They're like, what? You're stealing from me. You know, you're using my card? Well, they don't. They turn off their rational mind and go, yeah, I want to help get this jerk, and click the link, and boom, now they're toast. You know, or it says, you know, and to for you to help us that, you know, we need you to log into your account. Well, you just put in your login and password to your MasterCard account or to your bank account, and they know they sent the email to, you know, your email address, and now they know that your email address and that login and password are associated with that particular product, and you've without them doing anything other than trick you. And with very little technology, they've just grabbed a lot of your information.
Correct, sir.
It's the jungle out there.
So, but it's like the real world, though. If somebody walked up to you on the street, or the Nigerian scam started with fax machines or with letters. You know, the 419 scams where, oh, I'm a prince in Nigeria, and, you know, you send me some, you know, I'm a barrister in Kenya, and I can send you money. You know, the classic scam that started, they would send letters to people at random, and then the fax machine came along, and email, and so on. So none of this is really that new.
Wow. Next you're gonna say chain letters started out before email.
Wow, listen to that music. We really filled this whole 2 hours.
Not nearly enough Star Wars. Or maybe too much
Wookiees.
And we didn't mention Salacious Crumb once.
Oops.
Quick, say it again so it's not once. All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. We hope you had as much fun as we did, or even more. And we'll be back next week for another episode of Technology Bites. I understand that Peter Hughes is coming to town.
Geek Gathering this Friday.
Don't forget, the Geek Gathering is this Friday. Are you coming out Friday?
I will come out this Friday.
We have the new
I will come out to the Geek Gathering this Friday. We modify that.
Here I am!
Hello!
Oh, you're not coming out publicly? You're just going to come out
to the Geek Gathering.
Hi! All right, well, tune in next week. Come and see us at the Geek Gathering. It should be a good time. And either this Friday or next Wednesday, we'll see you again. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Wow.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groove House.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
If you gave to support KPFT in the last year, your financial contribution created opportunities for live in-studio performances, local news, Houston artists getting featured on national productions, a new morning show, and more. Your year-end gift will position KPFT to better serve the Gulf Coast. During the month of December, KPFT asks that you consider a year-end gift at kpft.org to this non-commercial media organization. This is our first week, and you help set the tone for the next year with your online pledge. We did many wonderful things in 2014, but the best is yet to come through your support. Please visit kpft.org now to make a year-end donation in support of the radio that you love. KPFT Houston.
When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we can turn what's often a burden into great educational programming. As the year comes to a close, we want to encourage you to let it go now and create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. KPFT's vehicle donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and one of the best charitable tax deductions around. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR to help out with that year-end gift. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM, kpft.org worldwide.
You are listening to 90.1 FM.